Good morning, America. This is the Katz Roundtable. John Katzmann is here, Sunday morning. So many things happening in the world. Well, we have one of the world's experts. I consider one of the best. We have Admiral James Stavridis. He was in charge of all of NATO for 4 years. He was 37 years in the Navy. And one smart guy. Good morning, Admiral Stavridis. How are you this morning?
Doing great, Katz. Great to hear your voice.
Now, I understand, let's start with China. China is starting to challenge the United States, in leadership in the world of military, should we say. Give us your opinion, what's going on. I know they're playing certain games in the Pacific, making models of aircraft carriers, the United States aircraft carriers. They're threatening the world with hypersonic weapons. What say you on this?
Let's break it down a little bit because you're exactly right. China is rising, and a significant component of China's rise will be their military. We'll have a different conversation another time about their economic and their diplomatic might. But let's stay on the military capability of China. Today, John, it may surprise some of your listeners to learn that China has a larger navy, a bigger fleet than the United States of America. China has about 360 ships. By the end of this decade, they'll have well over 500. The United States only has about 300 ships, and we are building ships much slower than China. Second, you mentioned hypersonic cruise missiles. Just a couple of weeks ago, China successfully tested one of these missiles that are highly capable and against which we do not have a perfect response. Our missile defense systems are not, as yet anyway, capable of intercepting these kind of missiles. And third and finally, John, and we know this in our public lives, China's offensive cyber capability, which they see as absolutely part and parcel of military operations, is rising as well. So in those particular domains, we see military capability accelerating rapidly. So the question is, why? I think there are two reasons. One is a global strategic reason. China wants to show the world that it can outpace the United States militarily. And this is why, in particular, as you mentioned, they are building mock-ups, models of U.S. aircraft carriers, and then launching long-range missile strikes against those big marked-out areas. They want to show that to the world. That's why they publicly launch the hypersonics. That's why they talk all the time about the size of their fleet. And then secondly, John, tactically, they want to control the South China Sea, which is a huge body of water, half the size of the continental United States of America. They want it because there's oil, gas, and 40% of the world's shipping goes through the South China Sea. And lastly, they want to bring what they consider the rogue province of Taiwan to heel. That South China Sea and Taiwan are potential flashpoints between China and the United States. We need to be mindful of the rise of Chinese military capability, John.
Admiral, you wrote the book that you expected a conflict between us and China in 2034. And then we had another discussion that you said it might happen sooner. Well, it's now almost the end of the year. You have a pulse on it?
Here's the good news, John, such as it is. I think that between now and the Winter Olympics, which are only weeks away, there's zero chance of an aggressive Chinese behavior. As we get into 2022, because in the fall of 2022, President Xi will be anointed as the new Mao Zedong of the 21st century. He'll be marked as a leader equal to Mao. That'll happen at a party conference late in 2022. Again, I think there's very little chance of a high-end aggressive move between now and then. After that, so into 2023 and 2024, that's when the danger zone begins to rise. personally, I'd say it's 3 years, perhaps five, before China has the full confidence that all of the military improvements they're putting in place will allow them to do what they want to do. But I believe, unfortunately, the chances of a conflict with China are rising.
Do you think they would do anything stupid to affect the American 2022 elections next November?
John, as we have seen, both Russia and China have made efforts to interfere with our elections, both by overt activities in the public domain and also covertly in the world of cyber. I don't think 2022 will be any different than that. And, of course, the big target will be 2024, because, again, that's 3 years from now, just over, where their military capability will have advanced. The temptation on their part to come at us during a period of domestic focus for the United States, a presidential election, perhaps we'd be distracted domestically, they might think. That will be a very dangerous point in time.
The other side of the military world, we talked about China, who is a major power. Russia believes they want to be a major power. They've been making actions towards Belarus. They've been thinking about the Ukraine again. And they are trying to gain confidence amongst themselves that this current administration is not going to challenge them. What is Russia thinking? What is Putin thinking?
Putin has two key objectives that we see on display in his current actions, John. One is to undermine Ukraine. He truly, deeply, madly believes that all of Ukraine is a historic part of Russia. And that's why he seized the Crimea a few years ago. That's why he's got troops helping separatists in southeastern Ukraine today. And to your point, John, that's why he has massed 90,000, I'll say that again, 90,000 troops on the Ukrainian border. He is threatening the Ukrainians. He doesn't want them to pursue membership in NATO. He doesn't want them in the European Union. He wants them to be, if not an absolute part of sovereign Russia, to be completely under the domination of Russia. So that's one thread. The other is Belarus, which is a country that Russia dominates. It's got kind of the last true dictator in Europe, a man named Lukashenko runs it. Lukashenko, has a mixed relationship with Putin, but at the moment, Lukashenko is working alongside Russia, facilitating the movement of refugees from the Middle East to Belarus and then pushing them through Belarus toward the Polish border, essentially the border of the European Union. This is to undermine the European Union, create divisions in the EU, create instability in NATO. So Putin, as usual, is playing a clever tactical game. Strategically, I don't think it's going to work because Russia really doesn't have a strong hand of cards. It's a weaker power than China by far. Its population is declining. It has a capable military, but over time, Putin's role here, as he sees it, is to try and control that buffer zone between Russia and the European Union. Hence, he'll continue to pressure Belarus. He'll pressure Moldova, a small country that you know. He'll pressure, above all, Ukraine. So look for Putin to continue to pressurize. I think the lesson on both sides of the world, John, is that the United States has got to face these authoritarian states. We have to have a capable military to do that, a diplomatic strategy, capable cyber. We need to bring our tools of national power to bear if we're going to stand in the face of these two authoritarian nations.
Understood. The other bad guys, or maybe not so bad or whatever, Iran, Turkey because of Erdogan, that area, gut feeling.
Gut feeling is the Iranians will do a lot of posturing, but at the end of the day, they don't want to get into war with Israel or a war with the United States. And I think they will, in the end, cut some kind of a deal. Let's hope it'll be a better deal for us than the previous Iran nuclear deal, which was not a good deal. We can get a better deal. That negotiation, John, will start in Vienna on the 29th of November. Stay tuned. But my gut feeling is we're going to avoid a big blow up in the Middle East. Let's hope so.
Last thing, Russia feeding Europe and England, the UK with gas or with any other fuel. What say you about that?
United States has said for a long time, both administrations, Republican and Democrat, to our European friends, don't become dependent on the so-called Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Europe went ahead and did it anyway. They feel there's an economic benefit to them. And I think already we're seeing Vladimir Putin kind of playing with the taps, if you will, on that pipeline. The only good thing, John, is ultimately it'll produce a good market for American liquefied natural gas, which we can ship in big LNG tankers across the Atlantic. But I wish the Europeans had not jumped into that Nord Stream 2 deal. And I suspect over time they are going to have buyer's remorse for having done so.
Well, Admiral Stavridis, thank you so much for everything you've done for our country. And this week was Veterans Week. And thank you for everything you continue to speak out for our country. And God bless you and God bless America.
John, thank you so much. And thank you for commenting on my service. And as I always do when I hear that, I say thank you to the person who said it. And I also say, you know, there are a lot of people serving the country in a lot of different ways, our police, our firefighters, our emergency medical technicians, our teachers, our medical personnel on the front lines of COVID. A lot of ways to serve this country. Let's thank all those who serve the country. But I do feel very grateful when people say to me, as you just did, thank you for your service. Means the world to me, Katz. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and have a great rest of the weekend.